Come in and sit with us. We're four friends, talking, thinking, and laughing. We take on the absurd and the profound, sometimes both at once.
And we speak about aging because, oh, yes, we're living it, feeling it in our bones. First time for all of us.
And we don't plan to go quiet. We prod, we tease, we wander down strange roads. A story here, an argument there, a joke, maybe a truth.
Dylan Thomas said it best, "Do not go gentle into that good night." We won't. We'll burn, we'll rage, we'll keep moving. We'll take care of each other as we go.
Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
So the Mac is recording.
Yeah.
In
and
practice.
I don't know.
These microphones.
Well, why don't we just say hello?
Hello.
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 Just a weird test here. We're trying to figure this out. Okay, let's try it again. Let's see what this... I cut down the volume. And does that help?
Is it recording now?
It's recording now.
So play it back and see.
Say something.
Hello. Good. Try again. To start this episode, we thought we would give you a taste of what level of expertise we had at the beginning of our podcast journey. You can hear the frustration and questions popping out of our mouths as we try to figure out what was going on and how we would navigate this technology. Welcome to Seniors and Technology. As we thought about this topic, we had a few questions like, why do seniors resist new technology? And even further, why do some seniors resist anything new? We all know that it's not the same experience for everyone, and not everyone has collaborators or teachers to show them how things work.
Quickly, my initial thought is that the resistance often comes from the fact that we've navigated stuff throughout our lives and now we're comfortable with that. And when new stuff comes along, it just challenges us and stresses us out. And so we just say, no, we'll stick to the old ways, you know, like, you know, why should we have plumbing indoors? The outhouse is just fine, and, you know, that kind of stuff.
I think about all the new things that I've learned in my lifetime as we came through growing up from not having a TV to black and white TV, like,
oh,
I'm
yeah.
old enough
mm-hmm.
to say that. That's mm-hmm. bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
To first computers, the first ones that you were an early adopter, Jack. You bought one of the first computers in when you were doing your PhD program and you were using it. And we had these floppy disks and so we have mm-hmm. come the gamut in terms of our computer usage mm-hmm. from, you know, typewriters to very sophisticated word processing. And sometimes, and then comes along electronic banking and all of those things. I still don't have anything in my Apple wallet because I don't want to pay that way. It's
but
just,
you know how to work it?
But I do know how to do
yeah.
it. I just am uncomfortable. And yet I watch my kids do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of, that one's kind of a bridge too far. So for me, it's like, okay, I'm okay with still using my card and swiping. That's fine for me. And it's probably the same difference, except it's in my phone and I just don't trust it being there
mm-hmm.
and more exposed to hacking. When I was working and had, actually was part of the IT department, I learned a lot about how to understand operating systems,
mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, and using menus. And Jack, this drives Jack crazy when I do this, but a lot of learning about a program is exploring the program
mm-hmm.
and clicking things and going in and out. And yet now, when I've been away from work so long, I don't have that same curiosity or interest or energy for it. It's
mm-hmm.
like, okay, here's something new. I need to do this, and then I just sort of look it up to see how to do it rather than explore.
Mm-hmm.
So I have changed in some ways my strategies for learning new things.
Yeah.
I think is the only.
So are you sort of thinking, and I tend to be agreeing with you that maybe our motivation to pick up new technology just kind of fades away, maybe because it's too much, too stressful. I'm not sure. I'm throwing that out there. I don't have an answer for that.
I don't know why. It's just I don't want to spend as much time on it, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be doing other things. I can remember my mom always says, I'd rather be in my garden or reading a book than trying to figure out how to use this iPad and FaceTime my family. She has mm-hmm. to sort of have a primer every time she wants to do FaceTime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes you need others to sort of force you into that learning, right? That to kind of encourage you to be part of that. Two things come to mind. One was when I was traveling in my work, and I had to go to Cameroon, and my oldest grandchild was having great difficulty understanding how far away I was and how long I would be away. And so they were trying to do descriptions and then where I would be and to just imagine in concrete ways how he would know where I was going to be. And then my son said, I think you're just going to have to be on your iPad at night and FaceTime us so that they can see your face, that they can hear your voice, and they know you're okay, because the anxiety level's going up, knowing that you're thousands of kilometers away. And so I had to learn FaceTime. I had to, you know, figure out how to use that minimal amount of time to say the things I need to say to the grandchild so that they would know and but give them some reassurance, but also keep me connected to the family so that there was that peace. I mean, I think that was one of the very first experiences for me to have to be forced into kind of learning that technology. The second thing that I thought was really cool was, you know, a lot of people have a lot of negativity about the pandemic. But in the pandemic, we built family time through a game called Among Us. And it was just an app of a game, but it included everybody in the family to be able to play this game. And you could have conversations while you were playing the game and everything. And it just fascinated me about how you could be connected, right? And so in some ways for me, being forced into new technology has helped me become more connected, right? As Facebook did for many years, you know, being connected to people that you used to know. So in some ways it feels like I've been forced into it. In other ways, I'm very thankful that I've had these opportunities to do that.
Yeah, it's that whole opportunity to be connected that is the reward, right, for it. I think of all the knitting groups I'm part of, and then FaceTiming, being able to FaceTime my sister every day and talk to her and look at her and see how she's doing and sort of have a visual. I can remember, Jack, I don't know if you remember this, when our son was at York University, we were in Alberta and he was in Toronto, and he got one of those flus that was going by, H1N1 probably, was really sick. Mm-hmm. And it was also before technology you could do FaceTime and stuff like that. And so I just kept phoning him and asking him all the questions. And I didn't have the ability to look at him and assess him from the way he was looking. We were ordering pizzas and having him delivered so that he could eat.
Yeah, I forgot all that.
Oh my God, that was the most stressful time. But technology at that point.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for it, because I think it provides opportunities to do stuff like that. And
one of our sons probably won't appreciate this story, but I recall that every time I gave them a check to cover a school fundraiser or some kind of piece of equipment that I said I would pay for the grandchild or whatever, I'd come to their home and there'd be multiple checks of mine still magnetized onto the fridge, and I'd say to them, could you please cash the check, right? And what relief I have now, in which I, as soon as they say it's $40 for the pizzas or whatever, I just e-transfer that thing, like, just like that. And I love it.
And
it's great.
The money's there.
The money's there.
Awesome. Yeah.
I have to yet learn e-transfer.
E-transfer.
I've never done one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nor
he's
have I
a resistor.
Online banking.
Online banking resistor.
But let's, I've got a thought, actually, via ChatGPT, which is a artificial intelligence app that anyone can use for a fee, but I think there's also a free, though it's limited in terms of the amount of searches. But it notes for me when I ask about what are the resistance factors for seniors in using artificial intelligence, and I'd never thought of this, that we, the ages that we are, I think all in our 70s, grew up with analog systems that were tactile. For example, a rotary phone where you put your finger in a hole and you go around and it goes.
Yes.
Printed newspapers. We actually took home newspapers and read them.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you hold them in your hand. And human clerks that you talk to as you're doing your banking, for example. And this way of interacting with the world feels less like, so therefore dealing with artificial intelligence may feel for many less like progress and more like an alienation. So that's something to think about.
That was really true when we were implementing an electronic health record. That's a classic example of moving from analog to digital.
Right.
And there was a tremendous amount of research in terms of helping people make that transition and understanding it. And I believe, I think, Jack, you've hit on something, because I think that transition from analog to digital is something that that is innate in seniors, because we were so analog, we were so hands-on, we were so...
Analog sounds like anal.
Might be that too.
Yeah.
It's hard for people in the medical system to give up paper charts, or it was then. I think now it's hard for people to go back to paper charts.
Paper. Yeah.
For sure.
And again, adding to that, in my recent annual physical time with my doctor, right?
Right.
She sat in front of the computer. And she could give me all the records of a certain, like she could look at liver, blood pressure, whatever. And she could give me all the statistics, all the notes, all the tests that I had done. She had it all in front of her. And she'd go back and she'd, oh, in 2012 this, 2010 this, you know. And I was flabbergasted, but I was so relieved walking out of there that we had a history on record, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
I keep reading that doctors are beginning to use artificial intelligence for diagnostic purposes. And tests have been done that show that often the AI is more accurate than the doctor was.
Yeah.
Because, and that makes sense to me, because it's able to access, and this is really hard for us to appreciate, I think, wrap our minds around. It can access all the medical journals in an instant and summarize the findings of any particular disease. I'm probably overstating it, but I do follow someone on not Facebook, on X, a doctor from the States who keeps saying that this is happening and we need to adjust to it. And our doctor asked me to sign a form whereby it was okay, giving her an okay to use AI. I'm not sure how that applied, what type of AI.
Well, it was to record conversations so that,
and then
get
transcribe.
A transcript so that she could have more accurate notes.
Yeah, that's what my doc, on the last visit, they asked if it was okay to record the conversation.
And transcribe.
Yeah, so they could transcribe it. They explained why. I said, sure. Yeah.
So it's making improvements in the medical field.
Yeah.
More accuracy.
Accuracy.
So, yeah. I guess what I was thinking, though, adopting new technologies, often we need to, my thought is, we need to be convinced that it's beneficial. Mm-hmm. And if not, then chances are we will resist it. Or even if we're forced into it, we might adopt it if we think it's beneficial to us. So I'm thinking of a visit. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I think that's exactly right. How does it benefit us? Because now it's so widespread and it's so pervasive in our everyday single life, we can decide what we want in there and what we don't, more often than not. And what's going to benefit us and what's not.
I was thinking history of technology can be helpful in this way. A few years back, we visited in London. There's a museum called the Albert and Victoria Museum, and it basically deals with displays of technology. And many things stick in my mind, but one is about the toasters. And it's, believe it or not, started with toasters that you would sit on top of a grill or something, and then you would put your bread in there to toast it. And then eventually that became when electricity became more common. Then they had these older kind of toasters. And then into the newer pop-up toasters. And I don't know if they had now these smart toasters on there, but you kind of look at that progress and you go, probably all the way along, people resisted that. There was probably somebody who said, I don't need a toaster, I'll just throw this piece of bread right on top of the fire and I'll toast it that way. And as it goes along, we need to sort of, I think, be shown that, first of all, technology and technological developments always happen. And second of all, we always tend to be a bit resistant to that, you know, and we look at the new stuff. I mean, if we told somebody, no, you don't buy a plug-in toaster now, just put this old contraption on top of your stovetop and turn the burner on, people would go, are you crazy? That makes no sense.
Well, then it's an induction stovetop, so then there's no way that it'll heat up.
A new one,
because there's nothing.
That's right, yeah.
So, what would happen?
Yeah, so I guess my point is,
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, just that when we discover something is beneficial, and people who are early adopters often sort of in a way lead the way, and sometimes it's down weird paths that don't work, but then they show the rest of us, oh yeah, this is okay, and then we pick it up too.
I wonder if there isn't a matter of trust involved. That is, we're so used to more or less understanding how technologies work, sort of old school, but with AI, all the language around algorithms, on the normal person, and I don't understand how it works. Mind you, I don't even understand how electricity works, other than electrons moving through a copper wire.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it does the work.
That's more than I got.
Yeah.
It must. I think resistance is a factor that creates heat. Anyway.
Probably, yeah.
Anyway, see, I think we would understand it. I understand electricity. When I read about it, I get it, but it doesn't stick.
No.
So I think it's the same with kind of technology. We sort of would understand how it works in the moment, but it doesn't stick because it doesn't have any relevance to my everyday life.
Unless you use it every day in some way, right?
Exactly.
Then you sort of, you just rely on and trust that system, right? It's like trusting your toilet, right, to flush. I mean, I might not understand how the system works, but I do know that it's going to do that work. I'm going to trust that it's going to do the work it needs to do, right?
Well, even with the toilet, you get into the bowl, or to the tank, and you can manipulate things to make it work if it's stuck.
It's still analog in some way.
It's still analog, that's right. Yeah, that's it.
But let me get on the track of ChatGPT 0.4. Mm-hmm. And there is a 4.5 now, which I don't think I have. And I use it every day, and it is lighting my world up. Like, it is amazing.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know how it works, but I try to throw trust into the arena, and if it's beneficial. So it's beneficial in these ways that I find. Creative writing partner is one. It will compose for you, and this is where education is having a real problem with ChatGPT and other similar apps. It will write for you, and it often will write better than you're able to write. And that's a problem for plagiarism. But you can also at any time ask for sources. And if you're knowledgeable enough, and maybe some people are not, and at times I'm not, be able to discern credibility of sources, like is this a good journal or a good book, and so on. I also use it for language learning. I do half an hour to an hour of Spanish every morning. Mm. I don't know why. I'm addicted to it. I guess my son living in LA, I thought maybe I should go down and speak some Spanish. But language learning is amazing. I can ask it grammatical questions in English about a certain Spanish word, and it just reams it out quickly, and often such that I can confirm that it's credible or not. Mm-hmm. Because I use also an app called Duolingo, where you can learn another language.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's apparently quite ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. And also as an encyclopedia, like the knowledge base is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. We're going through a revolution unprecedented in human history. Maybe similar to printing coming on board.
When the printing press came
in. Yeah. But I wonder, sorry, Jack, I wonder if one of the resistance pieces kind of twigged with me is the fear that this will replace you, you know, like learning, you know, in academia, all of a sudden you don't need the learned professor in the classroom.
Yeah, you don't need a human being.
You don't need the human being. I mean, we can see that when you talk about a lot of, assembly line and manufacturing aspects where, you know, people who work in those fields feel like, okay, now they're going to automate everything. My job will be lost and I will have no
It's a
means.
Realistic fear.
It is.
And
oh, I think
it's
so.
Happening.
Yeah.
Like Trump's move down in the States to bring manufacturing back. Mm-hmm. Well, manufacturing is not going to be human-based. It's computer-based.
It's going to be robotic.
And
yes.
robotic-based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you need to train people to run the technology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that raises for me the notion around what happens when technology is disrupted. And so all of a sudden your Apple TV doesn't work and you don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Looking at you, Jack.
I asked ChatGPT, but you can take a picture, let's say, of a wiring system in your panel and ask a question of it. It will interpret the picture for you. Now, all of this has a caveat of caution, right? Because it's not always or maybe ever 100% true. So it can lead to some disasters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's being documented now. But, another controversial component that I find interesting is that it's attempting to be introduced into nursing homes where the elderly have access to the ChatGPT.
You were just reading about that.
Yeah, collectively. And the issues of confidentiality come about. But also, one of the assets that is being promoted, and I check this out a little bit. Who is promoting this? Is it OpenAI that created ChatGPT to get this introduced into seniors' homes? And it's not really, though I'm sure they're implicated in it for sales purposes. But anyway, in terms of seniors' homes and the elderly in particular, one of the noted features of it is being a wellness partner, i.e. counselor or spiritual guide and so on. And it does it fluidly and beautifully because it's so affirming, non-judgmental all the time. I've delved into it a little bit and I'm a little scared of it because it's so wonderful. Mm. Who needs a pastor anymore or a counselor?
I am going on.
Carry on.
I'm excited.
How does that, like, you guys have Apple Watches.
Yes, Apple Watches.
How does that fit into the conversation that we're having?
Well, for us, it's been an incredible tool to understand how our body is functioning and what kind of things to look for in terms of if there's problems with the health or whatever, but also we measure our sleep, we measure our heart, like all kinds of health issues. I think you can probably explain this better because it's been...
Well, it has more monitoring tools. I'm always a little careful because, but it even warns you. It says this has no ability with the heart rate, for example, no ability to determine if you're having a heart attack.
Right.
It can determine if your heart is, say, in AFib or atrial fibrillation or racing and so on. But in terms of, say, some of the more serious things, it basically says, so there's some good caveats there. And even then, you know, when I find it's tracking sleep and that, it's, you know, some nights they will say, oh, yes, you had a wonderful, you had a great sleep night. And I feel like garbage because it didn't feel good at all. So there's a grain of salt that you take it with. But I think overall, the watch piece helps to monitor more as you're older what kind of health situation you're in. And maybe then look at it and say, oh, maybe I need to go see the doctor. Maybe I need to go to the emergency room or whatever.
Yeah, it tracks the data that's going on, right? Oh, and I think that's the important piece. Right. Then you can measure that data and say, here's the point where I need to call the doctor, or here's the point where I'm doing great and I can move to the next level in my exercise program or whatever, or I should be drinking more water because I have an app that does that too.
Well, so does Signe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I really think the tracking of the data, it is helpful when I go into the doctor's office too, right? Because then I can say, here's what I've experienced in the last month.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the caveats to everything we're talking about, I think, mm-hmm. is accessibility and cost. Because mm-hmm. not all seniors have the ability to buy an iWatch.
Oh, yeah, they're pricey.
An iWatch.
Apple Watch.
Yeah. No. Or an iPhone.
Yeah, right. Or other smart devices.
So,
yeah.
And I was going to say, too, that what came to mind is that I've been reading that the next step in artificial intelligence is the integration of app to app, so that the health heart on my iPhone, for example, that monitors my step cadence,
mm-hmm.
Percentage, yeah, mm-hmm. the higher percentage, the more you're walking awkwardly. Could be integrated with ChatGPT, mm-hmm. and ChatGPT could offer a analysis so that Google Doctor, which often people use, Google is going to become obsolete or taken over by AI unless they upgrade.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the integration of app to app, and that's a scary prospect.
Although you do have, when you do upload a new app, it often will say, will you allow this app
to share?
To share or to have to send notifications. And
to the Apple Health app.
Yeah, and I always say yes or no depending on what,
okay. So right? It's so asking for it.
Approval.
Approval.
But I'm not sure, like they might have to strengthen those approvals, right? As the AI becomes more functioning, right, around the apps.
So is there a wellness connection? Like Jack was talking about a supportive kind of wellness connection through the data from the Apple Watch that goes to the app.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in there? I mean, I've explored it a little bit, but I haven't really used it a lot.
Right.
Sharing sort of counseling or...
I think there's ways to set it up that way. We haven't set it up that way. Or maybe that's the next generation. I don't know if it does automatically share with, say, you know, medical personnel or whatever. It probably could be set that way. But I don't know.
It has a section in there called state of mind, right? And you can you can put a... Yeah, you can put the data in there that says if it's
you're looking at...
Are you drained? Is there a health or situation happening and you're concerned about? So you speak this and enter that data, right? Or what are current events that are happening today
mm-hmm.
that might be affecting you? And we think about those fires in LA many months ago, right?
Yeah.
Are you getting ready to travel? What kind of tasks have to be done today? And how's family fitting into those? That kind of stuff you can feed in to the data into your health app, right? And so then it can also then measure your mental state of being, you know, your emotional state of being, yeah. right? And it is more than just a physical tracking.
That's what I wonder.
Of your data, you know.
I wonder whether we're not getting into a rabbit hole here.
Yeah, well, we are with
Watch in particular.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Jack. Like, we've gotten into ChatGPT, and we've gotten into Apple products and everything into our holes there. But what is it about the conversation that...
Well, one of the questions I have a little broader is what happens to us, or how do we manage where new technology can be beneficial but also harmful, and we just get used to it? The example that pops into my mind is the automobile, right? We use it so much and we are so dependent on it. It's only been new technology for the last, 120, 130 years. And it has great benefits, and we all love it. And yet it's responsible. You look at the statistics for how many deaths and injuries
every
year. Yeah,
the Winnipeg Police Department was just reporting on that.
Yeah, and we just...
Distracted driving.
Sure. Well, not just distracted driving, but even before that, you know, all of the deaths that it's responsible for. And yet we just sort of, that's the cost of technology. And I wonder if sometimes we take that seriously. Maybe that's... lead to all the safety features that are being incorporated into automobiles over the years, or maybe not. Maybe we're just too complacent. And I use that just as one example.
The police were saying that distracted driving is going up significantly. Part of the reason for distraction is that big screen that
in
you
the cars.
Shouldn't be touching
they
while you're
now.
Driving.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, the navigation.
And put your, they're saying, take your phone and put it away somewhere. Mm-hmm. Don't have it in the car beside you.
Yeah.
But then there's the screen. You can't move the screen.
That's right.
I guess you can turn it off.
Turn it off. But for a lot of them, it's built in. That's
I don't
right.
even know how to turn it off. I should check.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I'm always using Spotify for music and everything. And
Yeah, because we tend to, you know, we're all focused on the road, but then our eyes go to that.
Yeah,
and then
it
we're
just
not
takes a
back.
Split
yeah.
second.
Yeah. yeah. Hmm.
And for seniors, that's especially an issue when your reflex time is slowed.
Yeah.
And you become addled and...
When you're too short in the seat and can't properly under the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And then you got the navigational thing next to you and you're kind of like, how the heck do you manage that? When you know you have to be looking out the windshield, right? And then that thing's distracting you on an eye level, whereas people who are taller don't have it quite in their eye range, right?
Well, one thing,
peripheral,
you know, does driver training nowadays, I have no answer, help mitigate that?
I wonder, when you do
driver training, do they focus a lot more on that with, say, you know, the teens or the young adults, people who are getting their license for the first time and in driver training? Does it actually really focus on that to such a degree that it can tell people to train them to not be distracted or to how dangerous it is? You know,
well, I don't know the answer to that, but when I took that refresher course for mature drivers, it was always about keeping your eyes on the road and scanning your immediate vicinity for anything that's coming at you or around and a lot of emphasis on putting the phone away and just keeping, basically the thing that you were taught in, that I was taught when I was 16, keep your eyes on the road.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, one of the advertisements for new cars I saw the other day, I was surprised, is the full 360 camera that tells you where you are on the side in relationship to objects on the back, on the front.
Yeah.
And it warns you if you're getting close. I'm thinking of a friend we had in Waterloo who wiped out the side of his car in a garage parking lot and found out subsequently when he needed to go for testing that his peripheral vision had deteriorated significantly, so he didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And for seniors, I guess that's all of us eventually will...
Yeah.
That's our reality.
Have diminished faculties.
Yeah.
But in resisting, you said the mature, what did you call it? Mature driving?
Mature driver.
Yeah. I can see many of us going, I don't need that. I know how to drive. I don't, you know, nobody's going to tell me how to drive because I've been driving for 60 years.
Yeah.
So I can see the resistance
there.
That's
a tough one, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but you've been, driving in Winnipeg for a lot longer than I have, and I have found driving here very stressful. So I wanted to take a course to sort of see if it would alleviate some of the stress I have driving here with these wild and wacky drivers.
Yeah, no patience.
Well, in the boulevard world.
Like, anyway, we're getting off track again.
But
that technology. So is everywhere. So there's technology in the car. Your new washing machine has technology that you can't just stop the washer anymore and start it again.
Yeah.
At the same place. So it is a wonder that we have integrated and incorporated, I think, as much as we have.
Right.
As we've come from our deeply analog state to this deeply digital state.
Yeah.
Of having it in everything that we have. And I don't know what ChatGPT will actually do for seniors in nursing homes. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It can be a friend. And that's kind of scary.
Well, but I think that's for you and your interpretation of it too. But I also think that there has to be people who risk learning that stuff, though, for the rest of us, right? Because we're not everybody's going to believe that ChatGPT is their friend, right? That some will still have some discomfort. But we always need seniors testing those things out to be able to share that with us, right? Because we do need to rely on each other to help each other through, right? In terms of understanding the technology and accepting the use of the technology, right? That we need collaborators. And I think we can do that ourselves as seniors. Some of us can be collaborating with others to help them to understand it more. But I also think we have to rely on the generations that have come after us for the collaborative efforts to help us to understand that, you know. It seems simpler to them to understand it, right?
Yeah.
I didn't get into some of my technology until somebody else came along and said, here's how it works, here's what you can do, here's how it can improve your life and your work and your family, et cetera.
Actually, back to the car issue and driving, it occurs to me too that some, and you never know whether this is for marketing reasons they would assert this, but the next step will be fully automated self-driving vehicles. Now that scares the H out of
me. Yeah, they've tested that. It's not been.
So is our near future in that arena such that seniors could, especially as our faculties diminish, that project of driving and getting from A to B would be taken over by automation? I can't imagine it. It's too futuristic. But some are saying.
Who knows? But I wanted to get back to your point, Elaine, about we need helpers and helpers in the younger generation. And they haven't had to make a transition between analog and digital.
Right.
They are immersed in the digital from the moment that they're born.
Yes.
From that moment. And they have it in their genes somehow through. And so the I'm trying to imagine what the shifts are that they will be making as we move into the future. I don't know. I can't imagine it.
Yeah.
Maybe it is self-driving vehicles.
Having
maybe
a steering wheel will be archaic.
Yeah, which means you lose control, right? There
for
is no
sure.
control.
Yeah, you're
for
giving
sure. And that's unnerving, I think.
It is unnerving.
Very, very unnerving.
Yeah. Maybe it goes down to how adaptable are we as human beings? And this is a real challenge for us. This really challenges us in terms of our independence and our control and our sense of who we are. Yeah.
Well, I like reflecting on apocalyptic scenarios. and one is that AI may find us redundant. And even once it integrates amongst itself and all of these apps and so on, such that we're more a danger than we're worth. And
So the future world is minus human. Yeah. We've been evolved out of existence.
There have been books and movies made about that.
We've become extinct.
Yeah. We can learn from that.
It sounds like the three boomers and the doomer scenario again. Again. So,
well,
I think at
I
that
hope.
Point, I think we'll say thanks for joining us today. Send us your best stories on seniors and technology. We'd love to hear from you. Good luck on your own journey with technology. Thanks for joining us today. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, RRS Feed Community, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design. As well, thanks to Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input, and we appreciate the support of all of our families in this endeavor, for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral four, followed by seniorsinthebuilding, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.